You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hand. Today is Thursday, February 16th, 2017. The Clippers are officially done with their pre-All-Star break schedule after their win over Atlanta last night. And this is our first All-Star weekend show. As we head into the All-Star break, the Clippers obviously have off today and tomorrow as the All-Star festivities get started. And then they have Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday off next week, getting back in action in the backstretch of their season against the Golden State Warriors on Thursday night, then with the back-to-back against the San Antonio Spurs on Friday night. But we're going to have plenty of time to talk about those games next week. And hopefully on tomorrow's episode, we'll talk a little bit more about the All-Star festivities and DeAndre Jordan, who's obviously participating in his first NBA All-Star game as well as his first ever slam dunk competition. But for right now, I want to focus more on the Clippers game last night against the Atlanta Hawks. Now, as I mentioned in the previous episodes, my situation has been a little unique in the last few days. So I got into San Francisco Airport today in the afternoon, and then it took forever for me to get down to San Jose, where I am for the weekend for my sister's wedding. But I did get down in time to watch the Clippers game, and I was at my sister's house, and I had Wi-Fi, and I was able to see most of the game. I had some NBA League Pass issues, which I always have NBA League Pass issues because it's a horrible product. But then, except for a real bad League Pass glitch in the second quarter, and then, you know, in garbage time, losing my focus a little bit with a lot of my family being around, I did get to see most of this game, so I was actually pretty pleased with that. And I was pleased with the game, too. The Clippers played excellent, and they played excellent defense, which is something that we really haven't seen in recent weeks from them. But we saw it in the last game against the Utah Jazz, and we saw it again tonight, last night against the Atlanta Hawks. And I think we saw, maybe in a way that we hadn't, sort of well-balanced contributions for the Clippers offensively. Some guys who normally don't score a lot did. Namely, Wesley Johnson, who had probably his best game of the season. 11 points and 4 rebounds in 19 minutes, hitting 3 three-pointers off the bench. A lot of that came in garbage time for Wesley, but still, I think it's gratifying anytime you look at a guy who's like a fringe rotation player. Wesley's a guy who you might consider, like, obviously the main players off the bench are going to be Felton, Rivers, Crawford, and Spates. And then you're looking at options for the 10th guy. Is it Anderson? Is it Bass? Is it Wesley Johnson? Those are the three main competitors. And so anytime you have a guy like Wesley Johnson who comes in and has a good game, it makes you feel a little more confident about that 10th man spot. And then if there's injuries or certain lineup decisions, you know, I think a big part between, you know, if the Clippers roster stays as is going into the postseason, I think they'll play those 9 guys who I just listed in the playoffs. They're going to play the 3 backup guards, Felton, Rivers, and Crawford. They're going to play most Bates. And I think they'll basically, when Blake Griffin is off the floor, they'll play Luke and Mbamute at power forward. And they'll play a lot of 3-guard lineups if they don't make a roster move. But depending on who they're playing, there's room for another guy to be in the rotation. If they feel like they need another wing, you know, if they don't feel comfortable playing so many minutes with a 6'4 guy at small forward, you could play Wesley Johnson. Wesley Johnson could see playing time as a long athletic wing. If you feel like you need a fourth big man in the rotation, depending on the team you're playing, Brandon Bass can get those minutes. And if you need a guard, or more of like a 2-3 rather than Wesley Johnson, who's like a 3-4, then Allen Anderson could play those minutes. And Allen Anderson, I think, has overall underwhelmed this season, although he looked a little better last night than maybe what we've seen in previous spot minutes. But the most positive impression, I think, has to be to Wesley Johnson, who's a guy who I think there's been a lot of doubts coming off of, you know, as a minimum salary player last year, having a decent but not great year off the bench at small forward, and then getting the bigger contract this summer and really kind of having a letdown year, finding himself out of the rotation or on the fringe of the rotation. So I think it's good for the team for him to find his legs. I don't know that necessarily one game means he's finding his legs, but if he can find his legs, that would be great for the team. I think it would be great for him too. There has to be, anytime you have a guy in a situation like he is, I think there has to be a confidence issue going forward, and if he can shake that and play well despite it, that would be great. Wesley's a guy to keep your eye on, though, because if the Clippers make a move at the trade deadline, it almost seems like his salary is like certain to be thrown in as filler. I don't know that they have a Carmelo Anthony trade that doesn't include Wesley Johnson. I don't think they have a Danilo Gallinari trade that doesn't include Wesley Johnson, because I think you have to do, I guess you could do Austin Rivers and Paul Pierce. That would work. Or Austin Rivers and Wesley Johnson, because I don't think Jamal could go out in a Danilo Gallinari trade. And in a P.J. Tucker trade, Wesley Johnson is a guy who's a perfect salary match, although, again, they could try to send out Paul Pierce and a minimum salary instead of Wesley. Overall, though, you know, I guess if you're trying to say, don't trade me, this is about all you could do in your 19 minutes in your last game, although there was one play where Raymond Felton had a sick crossover and dropped it off to Wesley for a layup, and he missed. So that was lame. But overall, it was a good game for Wesley. One thing that continues to impress me is Blake Griffin shooting the three-pointer. He was only 1 of 3 tonight, which is not like some amazing performance, but when he shoots it with confidence, there's like an ease to his shot that I feel like we haven't seen from deep. And even in mid-range in years past, it seems like a lot of times he's hesitating, like he's not fully sure that he should be shooting. And when he catches these three-pointers in stride and really shoots the shot comfortably, it looks natural. And I think that's really encouraging. And I haven't seen yet, you know, people complained when Kevin Love started shooting threes. People complained he's getting too far away from the rim, he's not being an inside player anymore. I haven't seen that from Blake Griffin yet. And I think a lot of it is because it's not like he's changing his game that much. He's not spotting up. What he's doing mostly is, when he does those little pick and pops, he's just stepping a little further back, which makes sense. So it's the same kind of play. It's the same pick and pop where he's catching it and shooting that jump shot, except instead of a 20-foot jump shot, it's a 23-foot three-point jump shot. More points per possession. Good play. Blake finished with 17 points and 9 assists tonight. The offense, again, being mainly run through Blake in the starting unit, with Austin Rivers technically playing point guard, but really offense running through Blake. And then Mike Smith pointed this out during the game. Blake played point guard with the starters, and then Raymond Felton came in, and Blake was playing power forward. And then DeAndre Jordan went out, and the Clippers were playing small ball around Blake at center. So in the first quarter, he played point guard, power forward, and center. I don't think we'll ever see him at shooting guard or small forward just because of the way the Clippers roster is built, but for a guy to be playing point guard, power forward, and center in the same position is pretty special. That it you know, not to make undue comparisons and put Blake on a pedestal that, as great as he is, he doesn't deserve, but it kind of just throws back to Magic Johnson playing point guard all season and then starting at center in the NBA Finals when there were injuries. That just kind of versatility and skill. And again, you know, I'm not saying Blake is Magic Johnson, but he has a special combination of of skill and size that allows him to play point guard on a good team, and they beat a good Atlanta team tonight, and they beat a good Utah team in their last game. And that's largely because of Blake. Raymond Felton, I have to give a shout out to Raymond Felton in this game. Off the bench with 11 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, and I believe 4 steals. 5 of 6 from the field. He was just a bulldog on both ends of the court all night. I think there might have been like a sort of light at the end of the tunnel feeling for some of these Clippers tonight, because they've been so tired and beat up, you know, playing 10 of their last 11 games on the road, shorthanded without Chris Paul, Raymond Felton playing a lot of minutes with that hurt shoulder. If the Clippers had been healthy at guard, Felton probably would have been able to sit out some games to get that shoulder better. And Doc Rivers even confirmed that Jamal Crawford was supposed to take some games off during the last 2 months and wasn't able to because Chris Paul has been injured twice in that stretch. So for a couple of these guys, I think especially Raymond Felton, there's like a light at the end of the tunnel. Like, we got this one game to kind of ball out, and then we have a week off to get ready for the last 26 games of the season. And he was just great tonight on both ends. He was amazing. And I think, you know, not to talk too much about the Hawks, but I was really disappointed in Dennis Schroeder. You know, I don't know too much about his game, because obviously he was playing behind Jeff Teague for a while, and the Hawks chose him over Jeff Teague and moved Jeff Teague, and Schroeder was just bad today. I feel like he was like individually just outplayed by Austin Rivers, but like not even really putting up a fight. Like, he just didn't care. In the third quarter, he just kind of rolled over and stopped playing hard. And that's lame. That's disappointing to me. But it is what it is. Taurean Prince, the rookie combo forward that Atlanta has, who I liked for the Clippers, but he was always going to go way higher than the Clippers could take him at 25. I think Atlanta took him. Did they take him at 14? Maybe. But yeah, way too high for the Clippers to have any hope of getting him or trading up for the pick. But I thought he played well. I thought he showed like really good defensive instincts as far as help side goes, being in the right position. So that's something to look forward to for the Hawks. I don't think he's going to be a star player, but I think he's going to be really, really solid wing, especially if he can get that three-point shot down at the NBA range. Man, I know I harp on this like every episode, but there was a play in this game. I think it was at the end of the first quarter where Jamal Crawford gets the ball. 18 seconds left on the shot clock, going for the second to last shot of the period. He holds the ball at half court until there's 10 seconds left. He dribbles to the right wing, tries to shake his defender, doesn't. Tries to shake his defender, doesn't. Now he's running out of time. He tries to make a move. Defender pokes the ball away, and Jamal takes like a contested turnaround three-pointer that hits backboard before it hits the rim. And it's like, why can't you just pass to one of the other guys in white? You have good teammates on the court. Your team is playing well. You're having a good quarter. Why do you have to take the shot for yourself? And it's, you know, it kind of goes back to what I said in the last episode, where when it's working, there are few things in the NBA more beautiful than Jamal Crawford's game. The problem is it just doesn't work very often. And he doesn't seem to have the decision-making abilities to do it efficiently, which is why his efficiency numbers have been so down. Despite his efficiency numbers being good in the last few weeks because he's been hot, for the season, his efficiency numbers are still poor, just like they were last season, just like they were the season before. And on a night like tonight, 1 of 7 from the field, 1 of 6 from deep, he's not helping. You know, he did have 4 assists. But I don't know, it doesn't feel like he's contributing that much when he's taking all these bad shots. It continues to bug me. We'll see what happens with Jamal with the trade deadline coming up. It's going to be interesting for the Clippers to try to move his contract that's guaranteed for $14 million next year, although because he's been playing well for the last couple of weeks, maybe it gives some team the hope that, hey, he can be that sixth man instant offense off the bench, whereas mid to late January, when Jamal was at the end of like his coldest month as a Clipper for 5 years, it started to look like maybe he wasn't that guy anymore, like he would never be that guy again. Now it looks like, okay, he has it in him still. So maybe it makes him a little more movable than he was a few weeks ago. I don't know. There's going to be plenty to get into in the coming episodes, especially over the weekend and then going into next week, approaching the trade deadline, about trade rumors and potential packages. Obviously, the three guys that we know the Clippers are looking at right now are Carmelo Anthony, Danilo Gallinari, and PJ Tucker, who are like kind of drastically varying degrees. Like Carmelo Anthony is like this huge, sexy addition, right? Danilo Gallinari is a little more low profile, but he's still a good fit. And PJ Tucker is, I like PJ Tucker, but I don't think PJ Tucker starts over Luka Mbamute. The other two guys are no-brainers. Gallinari is a stud, even though he's had some problems staying healthy. He's really a two-way stud who can play both forward positions. But Tucker, I like Tucker. I like Tucker as a backup 2-3. Problem is the Clippers don't really need a backup 2-3 because they have all these backup guards. So Tucker might be interesting to watch if the Clippers do make a move for a guy like Gallinari that involves moving one of those guards. Presumably to get Gallinari, you're going to give up either Redick, Rivers, or Crawford. Just for salary matching purposes, one of those three guys probably has to go. And once one of those three guys goes, you're left with two point guards, Chris Paul and Raymond Felton, and two shooting guards, whichever two of those three are left. And now you're not playing a shooting guard out of position at small forward anymore, and PJ Tucker can come in and be your backup small forward. As long as you have all five of the guards that the Clippers have, Paul, Felton, Rivers, Redick, Crawford, all five of those guys are going to be in the rotation. So there's not really space for a 2-3. Unless you're getting a guy who's starting caliber, like Gallinari or Melo, that's then going to push Luka Mbamute into a backup power forward kind of role. I don't think PJ Tucker's that guy, so I think it would be a little unorthodox for the Clippers to acquire him. Although I guess they'd probably just play him like spot minutes at the backup four or sub him in for Luka Mbamute so they have another stud wing defender. But overall, I think Tucker might be interesting to monitor if the Clippers can land one of the bigger fish that they're going after. Is Tucker how they help shore up their bench and make sure they get another strong veteran defender? Because I think Tucker's a great guy to have on a team. He's a great addition because I think he's the type of ego that would fit in seamlessly and provide a spark off the bench and play hard and play good defense. And you can use him in certain lineups, like defensive utility lineups, where he's playing a variety of positions, and Luka Mbamute, the same thing. You can really put those two on any tandem in the league, except for the super quick point guards and the super big centers. So you can put Tucker and Mbamute on Kevin Durant and Draymond Green, and it's probably about as good of a defensive duo as you'd find for those two in the NBA. And then obviously Chris Paul would be guarding Steph Curry as he normally does. But like I said, we'll be able to get more into what offers the Clippers can have and what the rumors are in the coming episodes as we approach the deadline. I think what's big for this team, though, confidence-wise, is that after having some bad losses when Chris Paul got hurt and really struggling to defend at a high level and have that energy, that Knicks game sort of got them back on track. And then they won in Charlotte, playing a little better. And then they won in Utah playing really well, and they won today versus Atlanta playing really well. And now they're carrying a 4-game winning streak into the All-Star break. They're still only 3 games back of Houston for the for the number three seed with two head-to-head games remaining. Which means if the Clippers can win both those games, the first one being March 1st, when we still don't know if Chris Paul will be playing, so that's a big deal. But the first game being March 1st, if the Clippers can win both those head-to-head games, the margin is now one for the rest of the games. The Clippers have one game left against the Golden State Warriors. The Rockets have two. So assuming the Warriors beat the Clippers and the Warriors beat the Rockets both times, and if the Clippers can then beat the Rockets their two head-to-head games, it's a dead heat. Now, obviously, it's kind of easy to take the Warriors beating everyone as a foregone conclusion, although I think the Rockets did beat the Warriors earlier this year. If they didn't, they put up like a really good challenge. And I don't think anyone thinks the Clippers are going to beat the Warriors with how that matchup has gone in recent years, especially with Chris Paul out. But the harder thing is definitely winning the head-to-head matchups, especially March 1st with Chris Paul still out of the lineup, because if you lose that March 1st game, you also lose the tiebreaker. So now, instead of going from like one game back to tied, you go from one game back to two games back, but really you're three games back because you have to finish ahead of them. You can't finish tied with them anymore. If the Clippers can win each of the last two head-to-heads against Houston, they only have to finish tied with them to get the three seed. So it'll be interesting. I definitely don't think the three seed is out of play, even as much as the Clippers have struggled and as much as they've had trouble being healthy. Houston has really slipped in the last few weeks after having that amazing like 19-2 stretch. They've come back down to earth. They've been closer to what we thought they would be. And that's not to say they're not a good basketball team. Obviously, they're a good basketball team, and James Harden is having an amazing year, but they look mortal. And for a while there, the Rockets didn't look very mortal. But it was a hot streak. Teams have hot streaks. The Clippers had one to start the year. The problem is that the Clippers' lows have just been lower than Houston's. You know, Clippers were 14-2, Rockets were 19-2. Those are two good stretches. But the Rockets don't have like a six-game losing streak like the Clippers do. So what the Clippers really need is another hot streak. It's not going to start against the Warriors, Spurs, back-to-back after the All-Star break, but in the Clippers' like last 20 or so games, they have a chance to get Chris Paul back, playing good basketball, to really go on a tear and have another hot streak. And that's where they can make up for some of their bad losses and that really dismal six-game losing streak. So I don't think that I'm not giving up on the three seed yet. I've been harping on it for a while, and people keep on saying, no, give up, go to the six seed. But 26 games left, three-game margin, two head-to-heads left. I'm not giving up on it. I think if the Clippers lose on March 1st, it becomes a much taller task. But even then, it's not really over because the margin of error is still just a couple of games, and anything can swing a couple of games either direction. You know, from a minor injury to a locker room dispute, to just a bad schedule, anything can swing a couple of games. A cold streak can swing a couple of games. Or even for the Clippers, Jamal Crawford getting hot can swing a couple of games that they're supposed to lose into wins. So they're still within the margin of error for the three seed. You'd rather be up three saying this is what we need to do to defend it than down three saying this is what we need to do to catch up. But the Clippers are still in the fight for the three seed. I think that's what's important right now. And I think it's good because it gives the team a goal. It gives them a purpose for these next 26 games. And you don't have to stick with it for all 26. You know, you can get 18 games into it and then in the last eight games go, okay, we're not going to get to the three seed. Let's figure out what seed we want to be in for playoff positioning. But for now, as the team gets through this next stretch, they have incentive to win games, and that incentive is that the three seed is still in reach. That's what I hope they go for it. I hope they get it, and I think they still can. With that, we're going to call it an episode. I'll be back tomorrow with our final episode of the week for Friday, and then hopefully back again on Monday if I can get a good enough setup, because I'm flying out of San Jose at like midnight Sunday night. So I'll try to get a Monday morning episode. I might have to do like a Monday afternoon episode when I get back to New York. We'll see how it goes. But we'll be back tomorrow with our last episode of the week. I'm getting ready for a little bit of All-Star stuff, discussing some trade scenarios, discussing whatever you guys want to talk about. This is a good chance, like we had near end January with a lot of off days, to get into bigger picture stuff, more, you know, precise stuff than just focusing on what's happening day by day with the team. You can tweet me at Lucas J. Han. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. You can read my work at clipsnation.com. Comment there. You can like ClipStation on Facebook. You can follow on Twitter at ClipStationSBN. Let me know what you want to hear about on the podcast. You know, this is as much for you guys as it is for me. You know, I mean, I enjoy sitting here and talking to my computer screen for a half hour every day, but it's only really worth it if you guys are enjoying listening and we're talking about things that you guys want to talk about. So let me know what you're interested in. With that, it is the end of our episode. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to subscribe. If you like the show, please don't forget to leave a review. And that's all. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.